app for those who conduct online-enabled harm is the phrasing that they use in Australia, but
That's
sexual
this
misconduct, for
gentle
example,
tug.
is very
Yeah.
online-enabled harm. I know it's a bit a gloved approach,
Yeah.
but if things happen, hopefully with this code of conduct in place, it should be more evident how to look for help, more evident for how to say, wow, this guy on Grindr is predatory or abusive, for example, and a mechanism to report it. I believe there's also a plan to be able to share the list of folks who have been banned, and make that available to other apps. I'm not super sure about that. We'll dig into it and see if I can figure it out.
Right, I remember reading about this and thinking this is the kind of thing, like one of the things that really jumped out at me when I was learning about all this, including the sharing, was just the idea of trying to make sure that they also implement some kind of anti-fraud kind of a thing, because I can imagine people using it as a revenge tool for standing them up, for giving them a poor experience, for something not illegal but unpleasant, and just punishing them by reporting them. If there's no mechanism to, like, I don't know, like the many countries lack a mechanism for doing something about someone who falsely reports someone. Like there is no false witness is not a sin as far as the legal system is concerned. So it's, I mean, unless you're in court at the time, but it is something that I do worry about people taking advantage of this system. But ideally, you would just have the police, when they do their investigations, they would ask questions and they would be aware that this is the kind of thing that could happen. And ideally, the apps would also come to realize if someone is regularly using that tool on situations that do not lead to charges being pressed, that that person might be a habitual fraudulent reporter.
Well,
And
there's a
then.
great quote from the Communications Minister of Australia on this, Michelle Rowland. She was talking to, I think it's PinkNews.co.uk, on this, which is partly where we're picking up the story here. Essentially, what she's saying is, if there's grounds to ban a particular individual, the quote here, if there are grounds to ban a particular individual from utilizing one of these platforms, if they're banned on one platform, they're blocked on all platforms. Essentially saying, look, you can't just shop around. Oh, if I cannot be abusive on Tinder, it's fine. I'll go be abusive over on Bumble. No, that's unacceptable. You know what I mean? Like, if you're being abusive, it's that access should be taken away, essentially. I
It'd be a
agree
hard
with
thing
you
to
that there needs to
enforce.
be a mechanism for how to address or reconcile that. Tinder has some things. They're using AI to, for example, flag and caution when there might be offensive language in messages. Yeah, they're using artificial
I
intelligence.
mean, when the microphones are off, I am 90% offensive language. So I don't know about that. I should hope the AI is a little bit understanding of context and, willing to ignore the swears.
Well, I mean, well, let me give you another example. This is this new story also in Australia in the same week. And that is about the Canberra Police Department, who are looking into homophobic assaults. Three men were targeted through Grindr in the last week. They issued search warrants and seized several devices as a result of it. So these are people who are using apps such as Grindr in this case in Australia to target and attack gay men for whatever kind of crime it is that they're looking to execute. But these apps are sort of facilitating that behavior in happening. Is that code going to leave Australia? I hope so. I would be concerned, just like you, that maybe some pillow talk is misinterpreted, and how do you navigate back to the good graces of the apps, as it were, that idea of freedom of speech and so on, but also
Also, path to redemption,
exactly. But also, there is an epidemic and it has been called such by officials at multiple levels of government, an epidemic in violence against women, an mm-hmm. epidemic in intimate partner violence and domestic mm-hmm. violence. And a lot of that is happening through these apps where yeah. folks are being targeted. So I don't know, how do we make a Canadian equivalent which is fair and balanced?
Yeah.
Let's see what Australia does and where they come out on it.
Yeah. Someone's gonna be the test case.
Exactly. I want to stick to Grindr for just a moment. They're looking at rolling out an AI wingman to make you a little bit more efficient and effective at uh-huh.
Just typing the word hey and leaving it there.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, sup. So what they do, this wingman, this AI artificial intelligence wingman, I don't know if I want any kind of intelligence reviewing my Grindr, but mm-hmm. this artificial intelligence would look at who you're favoriting. It'll look at the conversations, what conversations kind of spark and do well from you personally, like where are you lit up in a conversation. It might suggest people who you perhaps haven't reached out to, but their you know, correspondence might match well with you. You can't tell that from just looking at a torso. It's looking at really trying to build a more effective approach to using the apps.
It feels like they use the wrong word. This doesn't sound like a digital wingman. This sounds like a digital yentl, like more of a matchmaker, like somebody mm-hmm. who comes up behind you and kind of eavesdrops in your conversations. And then afterwards goes, did you really need to talk to them like that? Do you think that's how people want to be spoken to? Kind of coming along and saying, you know, I know a guy you don't know. You should probably meet. Like, it is a little bit more of a matchmaker thing. When I first heard about the notion of an AI wingman, it sounded cringe and probably ineffective, and probably the AI isn't there yet. But AI is very good at pattern recognition. So definitely in terms of being a better matching tool than people checking boxes. I want somebody between this age and this age. I want them to be like this. I want them to be this tall. I want them to be within this many kilometers, versus somebody saying like, look, you have a personality match.
Yeah.
You talk like each other.
Yeah. It's less about catalog shopping and more about, you know,
yeah,
cohesion.
It's nuance.
Exactly. Not everyone is going to have this AI wingman tomorrow. If you're on Grindr, you're not being spied on by artificial. Well, maybe, I don't know. But
AI is also very expensive in terms of the digital footprint it takes.
Exactly.
Up. It takes a lot of bandwidth. It takes a lot of power. Yeah.
Yeah. They're rolling it out to about 1,000 users this year. They're looking at about 10,000 users next year. I believe they're running this in the States first. So if you're in Canada, it's unlikely to have it. But they're looking at the full launch. There are about 14 million people on Grindr. And they're looking for all users to have access it in 2027. They are also working with a company called XHuman to create a empathetic AI chatbot. To really kind of deal with things like loneliness. I think we've touched on it in a previous episode.
Yes.
I don't know.
We haven't talked about it, but there is there's research on people who are addicted to AI boyfriends and AI girlfriends.
Mm-hmm.
People who are addicted to chatbots. That is a thing that's growing. We don't really have time for it today, but that is I've been reading about that. It's an ongoing problem.
Exactly. Well, we'll keep an eye on that and other stories as the news develops. It is worth noting that all over the planet, we see lots of stories where gay folks are being targeted through apps such as Grindr. Yet again, I would implore folks who are maybe going for a hookup, just to let somebody know where you are so that people have a sense of your own personal safety. Same with other apps that are out there, you know, Sniffies, those kinds of things. All right, we're jumping to our next track. I don't know if we tell it enough, but we try to showcase Canadian queer-identified musicians. This one's Dirty Eddie in particular. This is the track Big Boy, and we will be back just after this. Mm-hmm. Welcome back to CanQueer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith.
And my name is Sebastian.
Now, last week we told you the pretty heartbreaking story of how ethnic Chechens, particularly gay ethnic Chechens, are being blackmailed and forced into fighting on the front lines in the Russian invasion of Ukraine. I saw a report, I think it was in the New York Times this week, that something like 600,000 Russians have lost their lives in this conflict, a lot of them being pushed into it. But it's hunky-dory if you're in Moscow. The lowest percentage of people in the armed forces are from Moscow. Oh. So the Moscovites are living in almost an entirely different world compared to the rest of Russia. A lot of Siberians are being shipped to the front lines. I bring this up because the idea of Moscow being in a bit of a bubble came crashing down for queer folks this last week. Two gay clubs in Russia were raided, and about 50 people at least in one of the clubs were arrested. The one club, Central Station, and I think the other one was called the Three Monkeys, both were raided at the same time by the armed forces. Many, many people rounded up on the floor and arrested. I think there were 200 people in the venue at the time of the raid. So it seems like about 150 of them managed to get out, but 50 of them didn't. Mm-hmm. They were celebrating National Coming Out Day, which did not jive well with Russian authorities.
Right.
So, pretty shocking stuff. Like I said, we keep an eye on it. Russia is certainly not a bastion of EU rights and equal rights. Speaking of that for just a moment, the European Court has recently ruled against Meta. This is the company that owns Facebook and Instagram, as well as WhatsApp.
And WhatsApp.
Now, What they found is that Meta has allegedly broken the general data protection regulations. And you're probably thinking, wow, general data protection regulations, that's a sexy sounding set of rules.
Well, it's also zero surprise because there have been stories for at least 10 years of data breaches and personal information issues with especially Facebook, but yeah, a few of the others as well.
Well, there is a gay Austrian who's a bit of a privacy activist, and he had found, well, he very much felt like he was constantly being targeted, not by single women in his area, but by specifically ads that were targeting him, where you're like, wow, they seem to be really be keen on gay men. Like these ads are oddly specific to
Yes.
gay men. Now, it's not like on his Facebook he put, I am a gay man, identified as, but rather there is the.
He just really likes Shirley Bassey.
It's Shirley Bassey and Shirley Temples, really just Shirleys in general, is where it's at. But anyway, the European court found that, look, it seems like, or what the evidence was really pointing to, is that Meta, i.e., Instagram, Facebook, was quite capable by looking at someone's sort of collective behavior to ascertain their sexuality and then distributed targeted ads based on their deduced sexual orientation of the people. Now, it is against European law to do advertising based on someone's sexual orientation. It's the European Court of Justice in particular. They upheld an Austrian court ruling that said that they had been targeting, this is Mr. Maximilian, on this. Now, I think there might be a appeal on this, so we'll keep an eye on it and see where it goes. But does Instagram and Facebook know? I mean, they know I'm gay based on the recommended Instagram people for me to follow. I'm like, okay, yeah,
Yeah, they cannot.
they figured me out pretty quickly, that is for sure. I don't know about you. Do you feel homosexually targeted by Facebook and Instagram? Are you on Facebook or Instagram?
I mean, I'm on Facebook, but I go on there like twice a year. Usually because you text me to say, Sebastian, go on Facebook. I sent you a thing. And I'm not really much on social media that much. I do watch a fair deal of YouTube, and I can tell that YouTube is confused by me because I watch videos of like people who go into their shop and like lathe their own power tools, but I also watch videos of like kittens and like I don't know, people who build mud huts, and then also like a lot of really gay music. Really, really obviously, like nobody listens to that much Scissor Sisters, but
Yeah,
then like.
YouTube may have figured you out as well. I'm just saying.
But then there's like those channels with like weird shotgun bullets that experiment. I don't know. Like it's fascinating. I don't know. It's some people fall outside the algorithm. Maybe I only fall outside the algorithm 10% of the time, and the rest of the 90%, it's obvious. I don't know. But yeah, there are targeted ads to me. Don't no two bones about it. They've figured some things about me out, and then other ads. I think they think I'm a wine mom. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think I confuse Instagram, and it's a combination of really targeted gay ads, and this must be a lady in her 60s that loves gardening. Like that's it's the two vibes I get. I very quickly we were looking at a pretty horrific incident being reported in Nigeria, but a gay couple being beaten and paraded around. There's protests in Ghana as they look like they're about to approve a anti-LGBT bill. But the Open for Business organization has been looking at Uganda. Now, a couple of years ago, or last year rather, Uganda introduced the Anti-Homosexuality Act. It included aggravated homosexuality, which carried the death sentence. The act itself made me into a pretty aggravated homosexual. But Open for Business has found that the country has lost between $470 million, sorry, £470 million is a British NGO that looked into it, to 1.6 billion in terms of their economy. That's a loss in direct foreign investment, a loss of international aid, and a loss of trade and tourism. So it seems like the anti-gay law in Uganda could have cost them up to £1.6 billion.
Well, that's opportunity cost as well as the actual cost of trying to implement an incredibly difficult to enforce law. The amount of, I mean, that's one of the reasons why a lot of Western countries dropped it, because it was just so expensive and you got so many misfires.
Well, we were talking before about protests in Manhattan in the city of New York, specifically outside of the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund. They were looking at how do they bring some aid and financial support back to Uganda without that money supporting a government that is unbelievably homophobic to the point that they would put them to death. So how do
Unfortunately,
you?
the government of Uganda has a lot of problems going on, and that's only one of them.
Yeah, it's the
This
tip of
is
the
not the
iceberg.
only reason why people are looking twice at Uganda. It's a
Exactly.
major part of it, but it's not, there's a lot going on.
Now, Seb, the last story I want to share with you, and this might be a bit of a surprise. I was pretty shocked to learn that there was breaking news about King Arthur.
The mythological King Arthur.
Yeah, the one and the same. The
Okay,
one and the
yes.
same. It was an actual news story. Specifically, Denbighshire Council in Wales has they're doing a timeline of LGBTQ history in the area, and they've included King Arthur in that history, with the claim that King Arthur may well have been a little bit queer. Let me tell you why. Now, there's King Arthur. Many of you know, of course, everyone here is familiar with the legends of King Arthur and Queen Guinevere, and so on and so forth. But in one legend in Wales that takes place in Denbighshire, the legend of Ruthun, King Arthur tries to sneak into a dance, and to do so, dressing in ladies' clothing to avoid being seen or identified, or to sneak from to and fro. And
And
in
real
fact, in
historical incidences as well.
Yeah, in Welsh history, there are the Rebecca Riots. Now, these are fantastic. I don't know if you know much about the Rebecca Riots. There was a lot of the roads in Wales in the late 1800s, I think it was, were it was in the 1800s for sure. I'm not sure exactly when, but the roads were all toll roads managed by the English. So you'd try and go to the grocery store to buy a loaf of bread, and you'd be told getting in there, you'd be told getting back out. Your farmer was told getting in and out of his field. And it was just ruining the population. So to avoid being seen, the men, borrowed the wives, outgrown skirts and dresses, bundled up like a bunch of Welsh women, and then burned the toll roads to the ground. And those were the Rebecca Riots. Does that make all of those Welsh protesters trans? Absolutely not. I mean, yeah, I disagree. But according to Dingley Council here, this one reference in one legend makes King Arthur one of ours, I suppose. It's
That's
a new list.
insufficient. No, that's try-harding.
Yeah.
Try
Now
again.
you took umbrage with some other historical figures that have been queerified or yassified recently.
It's just there's so many out there who are confirmed to actually definitely be, something LGBT of some variety. You don't need to make things up. Just take the ones that are real and confirmed, and there's historical documentation. Just stop lying, because it's when you lie and then people figure out the truth, they just assume everything else you say is a lie. Like a lie is a thing that spreads. It's an infection. Like you got to be true right from the start. I mean, history's filled with all sorts of, gays and lesbians and bisexual folks, and it's fine. It's fine. Not all of them were famous. Many of them were not famous. You do have a few who were famous, and you can just say, well, look at that, what was it? That was it, George the Fourth? Who's the one that they used to sing God Save the Queen to?
I thought it was James or something.
Maybe it
But
was James or something. But yeah, there's lots of witnesses, lots of personal diaries and letters, real of the era documentation showing that people knew. So, I mean, like, now, you don't need to make things up.
I will push back a little bit.
Okay.
The domination of, you know, we talk about history is written by the victors. The expression, we're talking about Western history in particular, the church had a pretty big hand in what is recorded and what isn't. And I very much suspect that there are, you know, hundreds of years of queer folks that have come in and out of existence, you know, lived and died, that never got into a history book because maybe they just weren't recorded as such. I think a lot of queer history simply wasn't recorded.
Or they were, but their personal stories were not.
Exactly. Yeah. Or the people, you know, making record of the time chose not to include those details. Yeah. We don't know. It's unlikely that gay people popped into existence in the 70s. You know?
Oh, no. By no means am I saying that. No, no, no. Like, there
I
are...
don't think we need to take a stab in the dark and just decide that King Arthur, of all people, is now one of ours. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's maybe a bridge too far. Brings a whole new meaning to drawing a sword from a stone. That is for sure. All right. We'll be playing Must Be Nice to Be So Tough by Bill Ricky to play out our show. I have been Luke Smith.
And I've been Sebastian. And thank you for listening.
Keep my hands busy. Keep your peace. Let my body forget how to feel in your space. But I don't want to feel better, 'cause the pain is all I've left. Till my mind forgets every word that you said.
Canada is there when it seems no one else is. Are you struggling with an LGBT issue? Every day, PFLAG Canada volunteers are contacted by frightened kids and by angry, fearful, or ashamed parents. PFLAG is Canada's only national organization that helps all Canadians who are struggling with issues of sexual orientation and gender identity. PFLAG Canada supports, educates, and provides resources 24/7. Visit pflagcanada.ca.
You are listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, SFU Burnaby.